It's Monday, November the 20th, 2017. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Cairo, Egypt. Well, good early morning, or good afternoon, or whatever time it happens to be where you are. It is about 1 a.m. on Sunday, November 20th, and I am sitting in gate E4 at Terminal 2 of the Cairo International Airport, and there are a ton of people who have queued up to board our flight. This is a 1:30 a.m. red-eye flight to Paris, and I'll be hanging out there for a while and then flying to Atlanta, Georgia, and then back to Oklahoma City. I have had the pleasure the last 3 days of being here in Cairo for the EduForum 2017 conference, which is the second EduForum sponsored by Edupedia, which is a Egypt-based educational company, and really, really had a wonderful time. I am anticipating being kind of dead on my feet as I return. We started the conference on Friday, and I actually flew in on Thursday. Egypt is 8 hours ahead of U.S. Central Time, and so I landed about 8 p.m. on Thursday and met up with a family friend for a few hours and went to bed about 11 or 11:30 or something like that, and then got up and went to the conference. So overall, the jet lag has been good, and what I'd like to actually share in this podcast is a recording of my keynote, which I entitled Inspiring Curiosity and Creativity with Media. And this conference really had a nice schedule. There were two keynotes each day. No, maybe there were three keynotes each day, actually. And the sessions were mostly pretty long. I was able to share a 90-minute session about engaging STEM lessons and successfully flew with marshmallows, uncooked spaghetti, masking tape, string, and paper bags, because those are the supplies needed for the marshmallow challenge, and had probably about 80 different Egyptian educators that participated in that session. I also, in addition to the keynote, had a session that focused on using Adobe SmartPost to create InfoPics, and we actually got to do that session in one of their computer labs. And I will, of course, blog and share some lessons learned and things like that about the trip. But certainly one of the highlights was on Friday night, the presenters and the hosts were able to go out on the Nile River on a dinner boat cruise, which was wonderful. The temperatures here have gotten up probably just into the 80s since I've been here, and then down maybe into the high 60s, low 70s. Just really, really a wonderful, wonderful temperature. The conference itself was held in New Cairo, which is an area outside of the main downtown area. It's actually being reclaimed from the desert, and so that area is under heavy development. It reminded me a lot of actually the Qatar, where I was, I think, in 2011 for a conference. That was the second time I had traveled to the Middle East, and there was just construction everywhere, and so the New Cairo area doesn't have tons of people living there. They have plans to move the central government offices out there, and they're building different university buildings and residences. The American University in Cairo, which was the primary partner and played host for this conference, was located out there. Anyway, it was a wonderful experience, and I will reflect on it more. There's a lot of things to think about. Today was a sightseeing day, and it was absolutely wonderful. A family friend that I mentioned took Hamish and I. Hamish was one of the other keynote speakers and presenters that came from Melbourne, Australia. And anyway, we were able to travel down to the Egyptian Museum today, and as well visit the pyramids of Giza and have a wonderful dinner at the, Mona Hotel, and a lovely restaurant that just literally overlooks the pyramids. It was the same location where Winston Churchill, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Chiang Kai-shek met together at the end of World War II prior to the Yalta Conference, which is where Stalin joined Churchill and Franklin and basically carved up the post-World War II world. And we were literally right beside the garden area where they had met and done that. So, all right, they are boarding Zone 3. I am Zone 4, so I'm not seeing the need to jump in line. I'm really glad I got here about 2.5 hours early before the takeoff of our plane. So, anyway, man, it is packed. All right, well, I could reflect at greater length, but I think I will cut it off there and take you back to this past Friday on November the 17th at the American University in Cairo, in New Cairo, Egypt, for my presentation on inspiring creativity and curiosity with media. Oklahoma. Has anyone been to Oklahoma in the middle of the United States? Most people know about Oklahoma. We have tornadoes, and we used to have Kevin Durant for the Thunder, the Oklahoma City Thunder basketball team. But my family is there, and I've lived in the Midwest all my life, and it's my first time to Egypt and first time to Africa. So you have been wonderful and gracious hosts and hostesses, and excited to learn with you this week. Today we're going to talk about inspiring student creativity and curiosity. And I would invite you to either, if you have a QR code reader, you can scan this or you can just jot down that link. Because all of the resources for the sessions that I'm sharing this week are available here. And as I have been using technology and showing students and helping students as well as teachers to use technology, I have really liked using Google. Does anybody like to use Google tools here? So this is a slideshow that is on Google Slides. And so when you link to this, you can link to all of these resources. And please use this. If there's anything here that would inspire your students, that would inspire your teachers, please use this. I believe in sharing. I am a person who has benefited greatly from the generous sharing of others. And I'd love to share, so please share this with others as well. How many of you knew what you wanted to be when you grew up, when you were very young? You knew you wanted to be a teacher, perhaps. I wanted to be a fireman. And every time my family would travel to a new town or a new place, I would ask my parents if I could go to the fire station and I could find out about being a fireman. Well, it turns out I didn't really become a fireman, but I am a technology support person. And I help teachers put out fires all the time in their classroom when sometimes the technology doesn't work. Has that ever happened here in Egypt? So it's good to have people we can turn to help us put out fires. But I want to start today by thinking about this question. Because a lot of times we will ask students to tell us, what do you want to be when you grow up? In fact, I have 3 children, my wife, and our middle child is 17 years old, okay? And she is very nervous and anxious right now about college and what she's going to do because she feels like she must know what she's going to do. She said to me this week, Dad, can I just go to college and find out what I want to do? And I said, yes, you can. And the reason I start with this question is because I think we want students to be curious, and I think we want to ask some different questions. And so I'm going to weave in a little talking in this session about some change and some things that we have happening. One of the things I have done as a teacher is I've used curiosity links, and I know you can't read all of those links, but I have a website with all of the STEM lessons that I taught for the past 2 years when I was a STEM teacher. And so this is a little video to get us thinking a little bit.
and to start us thinking about not just what we're going to be and what our kids are going to be, but what problems they're going to solve and how they're going to be equipped for that. So how many of you know the name of the leader of Google now? Sundar Pichai. Alright? And he gave a presentation back in May at a big event in San Francisco called Google I.O. And it was actually Mountain View. And he said something that was pretty dramatic. And so I'd like to play just about 2 minutes of what he said about what Google is thinking about the future and about everything that they do and they create now.
But computing is evolving again. We spoke last year about this important shift in computing from a mobile-first to an AI-first approach. Mobile made us reimagine every product we were working on. We had to take into account that the user interaction model had fundamentally changed with multi-touch, location, identity, payments, and so on. Similarly, in an AI-first world, we are rethinking all our products and applying machine learning and AI to solve user problems. And we are doing this across every one of our products. So today, if you use Google Search, we rank differently using machine learning. Or if you're using Google Maps, Street View automatically recognizes restaurant signs, street signs using machine learning. Duo with video calling uses machine learning for low bandwidth situations. And Smart Reply and Hello last year had great reception. And so today we are excited that we are rolling out Smart Reply to over 1 million users of Gmail. It works really well. Here's a sample email. If you get an email like this, the machine learning systems learn to be conversational, and it can reply and find it Saturday or whatever. So it's really nice to see. Just like with every platform shift, how users interact with computing changes. Mobile brought multi-touch. We evolved beyond keyboard and mouse. Similarly, we now have voice and vision as two new important modalities for computing. Human.
Okay, so I'm gonna pause it there. How many of you learned to type on a typewriter? Typewriters? Yes, I learned to type on a typewriter, okay? So now, with your smartphone, how many of us have a smartphone? Raise your hand if you have a smartphone. Okay, look at that, lots and lots of smartphones. How many of us are speaking to our smartphones? Are you doing that much? Okay. I used to have an iPhone. In fact, I had it forever until this trip. I got an Android phone for this trip. And so it was talking to Siri, talking to the phone. One of the things that Pichai is saying in his speech, and I'm trying to get my head around this, is that we are now in a world moving faster and faster where artificial intelligence is becoming accessible to us, but we're only in the very beginning days of this. And so here's the big thing that I think we can shift. Instead of asking kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? Let's ask them, what problem do you want to solve? Because the world is filled with problems, right? It's filled with challenges. It's also filled with wonderful approaches to those problems, those challenges. And that's why we're here at this conference, to share those ideas. But the world is full of change. And most of the kids in our schools today, the studies say, may not have one job. My father, two jobs. He was in the Air Force for 20 years. He was a banker for 20 years. He did two things. I think I've had 7 different jobs, you know, and a lot has been in teaching and education. But I like this idea of what kinds of problems do you want to solve. I want to talk today about how we can make school, those three things in red, more engaging, positively memorable, and transformatively empowering. And I teach and work at a school that has been very successful for, in the United States, a long time, in Oklahoma, a long time. We have very little history in the United States. Do you know this? I think you probably do. I'm aware of this being here in Egypt. And so my school's been around for a while, but we've been very successful in a traditional way of instructing students. a lot of delivery of information, asking those students to share back with us and work individually. So it's a real challenge when we think about collaboration and some of the things Hamish was talking about today. How do we shift people's minds in thinking about what that educational experience should look like? And so my main thesis and idea today is that we can inspire students to be more creative and to encourage their curiosity in the ways that we use media, but not just what they show them, right? Because right now in this session, I'm showing you stuff. But when we let our students create, these are two of my fourth graders. After I finished my PhD, I went back in the classroom and taught STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math for 2 years at one of our local elementary schools. And so these kids are doing the weather, right? They're showing you the weather for Oklahoma, which, you know, at that time, it looked like it was, well, we'd have to convert Fahrenheit centigrade, but they're using a green screen and they're creating some media. A question I want you to think about today is, what is in your toolkit for digital media? Again, how many of us have a smartphone? Okay, now I know it depends how old your students are. It's very little ones. Hopefully they don't have a smartphone with them. It's amazing to me how little kids are now when we're giving these phones. The same phones the parents have, you know, sometimes we give to the students. But as students get older, this is increasingly really not a phone. What is this? It's a computer. And sometimes I make phone calls with it, but a lot of times I'm doing different computing tasks with it. And so when we talk about technology and we talk about how we have students use technology, I don't think we should be scared to think we have to do the technology, use the technology all the time. It's like a toolkit, okay? And if you're going to build something, I have a need to make repairs on my fence at my house, okay? I have a wooden fence, and my fence needs to be fixed. Now, I could just use my hammer and my nails, but I could also use a nail gun. I could also use a power saw. I could use these more powerful tools. And so we've been using tools for a long, long time. And as we talk about these tools, they're not all going to be appropriate at the same time. But I think as teachers, we need to get a better toolkit. And so for the past 6 years, I have worked on this website. This is a website I'd love for you to use, share with other people. It's called Show with Media. And each one of these squares, which actually I did draw, I'm not an artist, but part of what I want to encourage people to do is to take risks and show things non-linguistically, meaning visually. And so these different products are things students can create. And today I want to show you a couple different examples. I'm going to actually show you an example here of, well, it's more of a narrated photo or a radio show. I'm going to show you a quick edit video as well, probably a green screen. And so let's listen to some student voices. So I'm going to set this up for you. This is my classroom about 4 years ago. My students had been doing a project about sound, and they had hooked up cups to a string. Have you made a string phone before or seen students have a string phone? It's to learn about vibration, right? Because sound travels as waves through vibration. And so I want you to listen. These kids are going to talk for about 90 seconds. And I want you to think about what is good about the fact that these students could record their voices and share what they had learned. Because that was what they were supposed to do. What did you learn at this station? This is just audio, it's not video.
Hey, hello guys. Welcome back to another episode. This time that you can hear me.
This is Dr. Frank's classroom. This is Andrew, Madison, and Evan talking about today's video.
Today is my birthday. We're recording this on the same thing that my friend about Zach. Yeah, it's still my birthday.
Absolutely, Evan. Today is your birthday, and we're going to celebrate his birthday today.
But, okay. And also,
phones are special type of phones that have certain amount of
A string.
And it's like it makes things louder.
Yeah.
And so whenever you speak, everything sounds louder.
No, it sounds quieter.
And you do that.
Well, my friends are coming through. It comes through the
wire.
I hope that my friends are coming through.
If my vibration comes through the wire or a string.
Yeah. Tell them, Evan.
So.
I want to apologize to our translator because that was probably very challenging to try and stay with. But did you hear the students at the end say it was vibration? It was the vibration through the wire. Did you hear them argue because they weren't in agreement about what had happened and what they had learned? I'm going to give you 2 minutes. There's a term I really like, wow work. Okay, work that, wow, that was really something. I consider that to be wow work. Why do you think that is? Why would Wes think that is wow work? I have a little timer here. I downloaded from YouTube. I'm going to play it. You have 2 minutes. Turn to your neighbor and talk about that. Why would Wes say that was wow work by students? Go. Talk to your neighbor, please. Okay, very good. 2 minutes is up. Now, if we had a little bit more time, and even if we were in a smaller group, we might go around and pass the microphone and have you share. Like, this one idea may be something for you to take back to school. Wow work. Okay? We need to share more wow work by students with other teachers at our school. If we want to empower students and to enable them to share their voice, and to understand how important words are and how powerful their words can be, we need to amplify those just within our school community. So, here are some reasons I felt this was wow. Number one, these kids had a choice about how they expressed themselves. Sometimes we don't give a choice. And you're gonna write, you're gonna fill out this answer sheet, you're gonna fill out this worksheet, you're gonna write this paragraph. Okay? In fact, these kids, there was another choice that I was hoping they were going to take. I know these kids, right? I taught them. I guarantee you if I had given them a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper, and I had said, here, you have 5 minutes, 3 minutes, write down everything you learn, I wouldn't have been able to get that kind of window into what they could hear. How many wear glasses? Do you wear glasses? I have to get bifocals this year. Okay? I feel very old. I'm going to get bifocals. I can look at the world and see it more clearly when I have my glasses on. When those students recorded their voice and they shared what they had learned, I could see more clearly into their minds, into their thinking. And this is one of the things that media can help us do. A wider window, okay? We don't have any windows here, right? The airport yesterday in Paris, I've never been to Paris, I was in Paris, France yesterday. There were beautiful, huge windows that looked out on the airstrip, and it was just amazing. I think we want, in our classrooms, to have windows into students' minds, and media can, in many cases, provide a better window. Now, do you know what KISS means in English? Keep it simple, silly. Sometimes people say the word stupid. I'm not saying you're stupid. We're not stupid. You know what? This isn't for. But keep it simple, okay? Sometimes when people get their phones out with students, the first thing they start to do is to shoot video, okay? Is it hard or easy to shoot a great loop? Is that easy to do? Have you ever seen the Blair Witch Project? Don't see this film. It was a film in the United States that some kids just produced in their backyard, and they didn't really plan much. It's pretty hard to create a great movie, okay? You change the shots, you change the perspective, you're very intentional about what you're going to do. When I say keep it simple, how about audio, right? Can a smartphone that someone has, that you have, record audio? Can you put that audio with a picture? It doesn't have to be super complicated. Okay? And then here's the last point. Let's ask students good questions and then give them some time. Right? Give them time to explore, to discover, and to collaborate. The last thing, did you notice where the really good part was? Was it at the beginning? What were they talking about at the beginning? It was somebody's what? Somebody's birthday. They were going to celebrate the birthday. It was this long introduction, right? They were introducing, they were getting started. I've noticed when I record with kids and they record things, number one, it's good to have a limit of how long they're going to record, okay? But generally speaking, the good things happen later at the end. They're not at the very beginning, they're at the end, all right? So this past, for the past 5 years, I've been helping teachers use iPads a lot, and we've had a workshop called an iPad Media Camp. And we've started to use badges. Is anybody using badges or have you heard of using badges to show what you have done, what you know? There's a website called Badge List that we've started to use to break down the steps. Okay, how do you do that? Well, you have to capture, you know, an image, okay? And then you're going to record audio, and then you're going to put those together in some way. Those different pieces. So there's a website called Badge List where we're putting those together. So there's an example of student wow work. What I'd like to do now, I want to give you tools. Okay, I used to carry these around all the time, and I don't know how many times they got taken to the airport. So I don't fly with my Swiss Army knife now. But I want to help you with your toolkit. Okay, but I've also found at conferences and keynotes, we kind of like magic tricks, right? What's coming out of the hat here? The rabbit is coming out of the hat, okay? So are you ready for your magic trick? All right, here we go. How many of you know about this app? This is unfortunately not an Android app, it's only an iPhone app. But has anybody played with this before? All right. This is called Seeing AI by Microsoft. And one of the reasons I'm going to be talking about AI and artificial intelligence is I think that we're in very challenging times, and we're seeing some ways that this is affecting us. This is one way you can share this with your kids. If anybody, you've got an iPhone or somebody else does, you can download this app for free. And so what it does, it's designed for the low vision community, for people who cannot see very well, and it's a research project that Microsoft has. And so I'm going to play a short little video demonstrating this for you.
Seeing AI is a Microsoft research project for people with visual impairments. The app narrates the world around you by turning the visual world into an audible experience. Point your phone's camera, select a channel, and hear a description. The app recognizes saved friends. Jenny in top right, 3 feet away, describes the people around her, including their emotions.
28-year-old female wearing glasses, looking happy.
It reads text out loud as it comes into view, like on an envelope,
kindergarten,
PO box, or a room entrance,
conference 2005.
Or scan and read documents like books and letters. The app will guide you and recognize the text with its format.
Top and left edge is not visible. Hold steady. Lease agreement. Disagreement.
When paying with cash, the app identifies currency bills.
$20.
When looking for something in your pantry or at the store, use the barcode scanner with audio cues to help you find what you want.
Campbell's tomato soup.
When available, hear additional product details.
Heated microwave full-on hat.
And even hear descriptions of images in other apps like Twitter by importing them into Seeing AI.
A close-up of Bill Gates.
Finally, explore our experimental features, like scene descriptions, to get a glimpse of the future.
I think it's a young girl throwing a frisbee in the park.
Experience the world around you with the Seeing AI app from Microsoft.
Okay. Now, I can't tell you today everything that artificial intelligence is going to bring to our world, but I can tell you that people a lot smarter than me, there's a lot of people out there like that, say this is the next wave, okay? Industrialization has brought huge change to our society. Automation has been happening since the Industrial Revolution, but artificial intelligence is here today, and we're in the early days, and it's coming, and that app is something you can show to your students tomorrow and start to talk about that. You could write about that, right? How many of you are writing teachers? You might teach writing. Okay? What a great topic to talk about with students. How could an app like that change how we do things in our lives? Who might that impact the most? So, let's talk just real briefly about why artificial intelligence is a big deal. And one of the reasons I'm doing this is, I'm curious about this. Right? We can use media to show things to our students to encourage their thinking and to encourage their own curiosity. And so, how many of you use Siri? Anybody talk to Siri? Okay. My wife, you know, has a male British voice for her Siri. I have a female Australian for my Siri voice. But these kinds of tools like Siri and Echo and Alexa, are these for sale in Egypt? Are you guys using these? Okay, because this is very new for us. These are, it's called smart assistants. And by the way, there's some place between creepy, you know, creepy, like, I don't know about that. Like, is it listening to me all the time? Is it recording me all the time? So there's a line between creepy and then, wow, that's really cool. You know, that's really helpful. So, Google has their assistant. I don't have one of these. This is their home assistant. And this is a hard one to look at. But if you go on their website, you know, it can do things like, hey Google, you know, tell me this. Or, you know, it's also where we're starting to control our homes. Okay? Does anyone have a smart home yet? Or you can go in and say, please turn down the lights. Okay? I'd like to turn on my television. Okay? This used to be science fiction, but this is happening today, right? So, like I said, there's a line between exciting and great, and creepy and really scary. And this starts to get into what some people consider a little scary. And I'm not talking about the Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm not talking about that. Science fiction. I'm talking about reality and robots replacing truck drivers. So, this is an article from September of last year saying that robots could replace 1.7 million truckers in the United States. My state? Can you find me? Where do I live? Right there. In fact, this is where I grew up, in Kansas. I lived in Texas a long time. And anyway, I live right there now. Okay? 23 states in my country right now, the number one job is what? Driving a truck. Okay? Do you have to go to college to drive a truck? No? How much can you earn driving a truck in the United States? A pretty, you know, middle income wage, right? And we're talking 50,000 plus. I mean, you can earn that driving a truck. And so when we talk about trucks that do not have a driver, we're talking about some big changes that are happening in our society. And this is happening quickly. This isn't something that's just, it's not going to be next year, but it's also not 20 years away. It's happening sooner. So, are there any Tesla cars here in Egypt? I bet somebody has one. Okay, I don't have one. I've sat in one, okay? But these are, in fact, I went to California. Does anyone watch Iron Man movies, okay, Marvel Comics? Right? The Tesla car that was in the first Iron Man, I sat in it. So cool. Okay? And so that's science fiction, right? Tony Stark, not a real guy, right? Elon Musk is a real guy, and his company is developing cars that today have the capability to drive themselves. So, this is a video of a Tesla self-driving car, and the person who is driving this car is not doing anything with the steering wheel. See his hands? His hands are here. Okay? Look at the analysis of what's happening here on the screen. Machine learning and artificial intelligence, which are not the same things, but they're similar, have the ability to process incredible amounts of information. So again, I'm coming at this from a couple perspectives. Number one, Would this be something interesting that your kids at school, your students, might they be interested in this? Because this isn't Star Trek. This isn't Star Wars. This is right now. This is the technology in every Tesla car that they're producing today. In a world where our cars are able to sense and detect all of this, what does that mean for driving? What does that mean for our society? Is anybody else excited about self-driving cars? I am. Because you know what? I'd like to do some other things when I'm riding up to Kansas to see my parents or, you know, going different places. So, curiosity. Using media as a way to inspire student curiosity, but also inviting students to be able to create. How many of you have seen this demonstration from Google's May event? This is pretty amazing, okay? My wife, who's a little older than I am, 5 years older, is a huge Star Trek fan, okay? And some of the technologies in Star Trek have started to show up in the real world. And so this is one that Google has announced with its Pixel phone for real-time language translation. And I think that probably the translators translating me right now are going to be, I don't know though, are they going to be excited? Maybe it's going to put them out of a job. What does this mean, right? That's a question. Here's a demo. Oops. Pixelbuds work great with Pixel. They even give you access to a new real-time translation experience. It's an incredible application of Google Translate powered by machine learning that's like having a personal translator by your side. To show you how easy this experience is, I'd like to invite Isabel back on stage for a conversation in her native language, Swedish. So, Isabel is going to speak Swedish into her Pixel Buds, and I'll hear the English translation out of Pixel 2's front speakers. And then I'll respond in English, and she'll hear the Swedish translation in her Pixel Buds. To illustrate this today, you'll hear both sides of the conversation. Hey Isabel, how's it going?
Hey Isabel, hur är läget?
Here for Ken Park.
Absolutely nothing, thank you.
What do you think of these cool new headphones?
Vad tycker ni om de här coola nya hörlurarna?
Mitt team designade dem, så jag tycker de är ganska coola.
So while you're up here, what color should I get?
Medan du är här, vilken färg ska jag välja?
Jag tror ganska blå skulle passa dig.
Alright.
Jag tror jag drar publiken in och ser några fler lilla grejer.
So, if we're to think about, oh, and here's a shameless plug. Every Wednesday night in North America, my friend Jason and I have a show on YouTube Live where we talk about these kinds of things. This is our podcast called the EdTech Situation Room. And one of the things we've been talking about on that show, and part of the reason I'm talking about this right now, is we've been talking about this. What does this mean for teaching and learning? Is there an implication for it? I think that there is. And sometimes people will recognize, okay, technology work. Kids have to be using technology. But it's not just about using the technology. It's about creating the technology, understanding how the technology works, and as a citizen, being assertive over that. And I'm not going to get very political here with my country, but we had some very dramatic things happen in our most recent election with Russia and the ways in which our election was hacked. That's what our intelligence community said. Facebook was huge for my country politically. And I only know a little bit about Egypt, but a little bit that I know, social media, Facebook, it's been a big thing in your country. In every country, right? We should not just sit back and let people in California, love people in California, nothing against California, but seriously, the people who are coding and writing that, They're dramatically shaping our lives today, the tools and the algorithms that they create. And so when we see this stuff happening, we're not just passengers on the train. We're not just riding the bus. We have a chance to drive the bus, to inspire our students to drive the bus. Where do we want to go? Where do we want this technology to take us? And I firmly believe that part of this is having students create media. So students need to create and share, not just listen, not just watch and consume and regurgitate. It's not a very nice word, but sometimes that's what education feels like, right? I'm going to give you information, give it right back to me. Okay? We've got to be doing more than that. We need to emphasize things like creativity, right? Who's going to invent the fix for the election in my country? Right? Who's going to prevent the election machines in states all over the United States, and probably here in Egypt, from being hacked by somebody who wants to affect the election? It's going to be your students. Maybe it's going to be you. Maybe it's going to be your brother. Maybe it's going to be your neighbor. I don't know. But we as educators have a huge responsibility in our society to inspire students to meet these challenges. How important are communication skills? Huge, right? And media and technology let us practice our communication skills and get more feedback than perhaps we've ever had before. Problem solving, collaboration, and what we heard from Hamish this morning, design thinking, all of these need to be emphasized in this rapidly changing, if you believe Google, AI-centric world. So let's take a look at a couple more examples in the last 10 minutes that we have here. I want to show you one from my wife's classroom last week, okay? My wife teaches third grade, so these are kids that are like 8 years old. We might teach 8-year-olds, okay? So we're going to see one of these, okay? This is a quick edit video. What technology do you need to make a quick edit video? You need a smartphone, okay? Is this Android phone going to work? I bought this for $146 off of Amazon. Okay? Works great. It's been phenomenal. I don't have to spend $1,000 on a brand new iPhone in order to do this. And so you can quote me on this. This is one of the things I like to say. Video is the pencil of the 21st century. Who's got pencils in their class today? You got pencils? You've all got pencils. All right, some people are asleep. It's kind of getting late. I think video needs to be used as regularly and as commonly in our classrooms as pencils. And so here is a video that my wife shared on Twitter. So I'm going to click on this link. We'll bounce out to Twitter. Okay? And her student had been coding with an app called Scratch Junior, PBS Scratch Junior. We're going to listen to him talk. Oops.
Project you'd like to share with us. Tell us a little about your project first.
Okay, I made this project on Scratch Junior coding, and it's a project based off of my favorite show, Pokemon. I made it like a Pokemon battle, and I'm going to reset it real quick, and then I'll show you this. The way it works is you tap on this Pokemon called Squirtle 2 times, you run into Pikachu, disappears, and then this the Ultra Ball runs and touches Pikachu. When it touches Pikachu, there's this screen where it says, "Did you caught Pikachu?" Then you tap on the slime, sometimes it takes a minute, and it shows you some of the Pokemon you have. When you tap on this one, it says his name, like it. This one says Pikachu, this one says Charmander, and this one says Squirtle. Thank you for listening about my project.
Okay, can you
I'm going to pause there. And do you know what? I just took a video of that. Because I'm going to go back on Monday, and I'm going to show him and the other people in their class how they just taught a bunch of teachers in Egypt about how he was coding and what he was doing with his project. All right? That is a quick edit video. Did you notice how my wife asked him to explain his thinking? To explain his thinking. There's a big college word for that. It's called metacognition. You heard of this before? Metacognition. Thinking about thinking. We need to take the time with our students to have them explain their thinking. And guess what? If you use media for students to explain their thinking, many times they can do it much more freely, much more quickly. Writing is still important. Okay? We still need kids to be able to write. My daughter just got her ACT score back. Don't you have to get into college in the United States, right? And you guys have to take ACT, you have different tests, probably, right? College admission? Or maybe not. Going to the States? Anyway, tests are a big deal, right? I know tests are a big deal here in Egypt, and I know they're a big deal in the United States. And I'm not saying that we skip writing. But when we want students to be explaining themselves, and we want them to be telling and sharing what they know, media can be a very powerful tool. So, if we had a little more time, we might discuss why that was wow work. Is anyone using this tool today? Seesaw? Look at that! Yes! Egyptian. I'd love to talk to you guys later, actually, you all. Because this has been in my wife's classroom for the last 4 years, and at our school for the last 2 years, the most important technology tool we've used. Why? Because it's a digital portfolio. It's a way for students to have a digital record of what they've learned and to share with parents. Right? How many of you are parents? You have children. Okay? I was supposed to be at a parent-teacher conference yesterday. We're going to have to do it next week. What do I want to hear from my daughter's teacher? I want to hear about the work she's done. I want to hear about what she's learned. She's having trouble. I want to know about that too. But being able to see things like that, it's incredibly powerful. So again, resources, how do you make a...
Well, unfortunately, something happened to the end of this recording. So I'm glad we were able to record most of that. But apologize that the conclusion of the keynote was cut short. So I want to thank you very much for listening to Speed of Creativity. Remind you that in addition to periodic podcasts here on speedofcreativity.org, you can also listen to almost weekly podcasts that I co-produce with my friend Jason Neifer from Missoula, Montana on the EdTech Situation Room. And you can find that on edtechsr.com. You can go to edtechsr.com/links where you'll find all of the show links. On EdTechSR, we talk about recent technology news through an educational lens. You can also follow us on EdTechSR on Twitter, which is the best way to stay up to date on changes for show dates and times, which does happen periodically. So, thank you so much for tuning in, and if you found any of the resources or ideas helpful or beneficial, please reach out to me on Twitter. I am W. Fryer, or you can certainly leave a comment old school wise here on this podcast on speedofcreativity.org.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.